Stewart diving to the goal line. A touchdown and a title for the Patriots.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
They have completed the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. And a silver trophy is coming back to New England.
You're listening to the Patriots All 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Adam Kirkchen.
This is unequivocally the sweetest.
Here we go. It's rebranded, relaunched, renamed, back and better than ever. The Patriots All 22 podcast powered by CLNS Media and the CLNS Media Podcast Network. And Adam, before we talk about some football, this is your first time on the airwaves since we renamed the pod and partnered with CLNS. A lot of excitement, new football season, newish podcast for us.
Yeah, I was real excited. A few months ago, you told me about the possibility of this being the next move. And I've always enjoyed doing this thing, and it's great. And, you know, I'm no longer at the Herald. I'm running a high school and college Massachusetts-centric football site called massvarsity.com. So I've been watching a lot of the football at that level. But obviously still keeping up with the Pats. And it's going to be a great, fun year to talk football.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody should go check out Mass Varsity. It is great stuff. And this year, you got BC and UMass. I know not a lot of people want to believe the hype quite yet with those two teams, but some really talented players, some guys that are going to be playing on Sunday eventually on both of those teams, I think. So yeah. It's a good time right now for Boston, Massachusetts area college football, which hasn't always been the case, at least in my you know childhood and adulthood. So in my time, it hasn't always been too great for those two programs, but right now it looks like they're hitting the ground running.
Yeah, and we need to see bigger crowds at these games, honestly, especially for BC. They're playing a lot of big time opponents this year, and they really have a good team. You know, it's a lot more than just AJ Dillon out there, even though he's unless he gets hurt, man, that kid's going to have a very great or very productive NFL career, I think. He's going to be in the Heisman discussion. They got a great offensive line, great defense. So get out there and see those games. Those crowds are too small.
Yeah, absolutely. AJ Dillon is well worth the price of admission, and sometimes you get in for free for those college games. So it's definitely worth to go see AJ Dillon 100%. But let's talk about the pros now. Obviously, the Patriots are about to kick off another season, the 19th year of the Belichick run, the 18th year of Tom Brady's career, I believe. But before we get to the Houston Texans, we want to talk expectations, because everybody around here, as you know, Adam, and as I know very well, it's Super Bowl or bust. With a lot of Patriots fans, but specifically other than, you know, playing into late January, early February, what are you looking for from this team this year?
Well, honestly, I don't think anything changes as far as expectations. I think the biggest thing for me, big picture, is what the defense looks like under Brian Flores. I've heard a lot of
we think too alike sometimes.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody's talking about how he simplified things and the players are playing faster. A lot of players are talking about that via reports from camp. And I think, you know, you got a healthy Dante Hightower back. You got a healthy Derek Rivers. You got a lot of playmakers back there that, you know, could make a huge difference. Now, you know, you watch some of the preseason games and you don't want to put too much stock into them, but you watch them against the Panthers and teams like that who can spread the ball and make things difficult on them. That they might still give them trouble. Now, we want to see that, and we'll see it the first week when they take on the Texans against a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, who can escape the pocket, can extend plays, and, you know, throw the ball down the field accurately. So that'll be a big test. I mean, the last time this defense was on the field, they got smoked against a really good Philly team. So, you know, you really just want to see how far they progress.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of the players, it surprised me how much the players have come out and said, especially Dante Hightower kind of being the ringleader of this, is saying that this defense is playing faster. It's easier to play than it was under Matt Patricia. Now that they're under Brian Flores, who's not officially the defensive coordinator, but is the de facto defensive coordinator. I don't know if they're purposely trying to throw Patricia under the bus or anything like that. I doubt it, just knowing the guys in the locker room a little bit that I do, and I'm sure you would attest to this, that they're not out to get anybody most of the time. So the interesting thing is, though, is that a lot of those guys are saying the same thing, which is that it's a little bit easier, the play calling is a little bit more natural, and they're able to play faster, which I think is what everybody in New England wants to see. But we're kind of on along the same lines here. And basically for me, it's, can these new guys that they've kind of put into this system this year get back or come into here into New England and really make a huge difference and help this defense take a step forward and not be, you know, the poorest defense that it was last year, where you look at a lot of metrics and they're towards the bottom of the league except points scored or points allowed, which everybody likes to remind you of. But you look at anything in terms of yards and success rates and third downs and all those types of things, and they're all towards the bottom of the league. So guys like Adrian Claiborne, Danny Shelton, Derek Rivers coming back from the ACL, can these guys all, you know, kind of contribute, carve out roles, and allow this defense to take that next step forward? And then also this cornerback group behind Stephon Gilmore, I think there's a lot of question marks for a lot of people because there's not names that you necessarily know. But this is a really young cornerback group. So if you're looking for any kind of point in the roster to find some youth, I know it's been a big topic of discussion as well, then the cornerback group is one place where you can kind of look, and they have three rookies. You know, Gilmore is not that old. He's only 27. Eric Rowe is not that old either. So you kind of have a really young group of corners who kind of, you know, that can scare you a little bit, especially early on in the season. But I think as the season develops, you're going to see that they have a lot better depth and a lot better, you know, future there at the cornerback position than they had. I think both of us are on the same page here with the defense kind of being the number one question. I think we both are on the same page as well that the offense is going to score plenty of points. You know, Tom Brady is going to be able to score plenty of points and be able to get them to where they need to be. So the defense is kind of going to be, once again, the thing that it kind of either hurts or helps them win a Super Bowl. That is kind of a question mark here.
Yeah, and what I really want to see this first game, really, but more in a big picture sense is, and you've talked about it and really, you know, highlighted it well in some of your Twitter threads, is what kind of blitz schemes are we going to see? Are we going to see a lot of creativity with that? Are we going to see more aggressive play calling on the defensive side of the ball? Are we going to see you know, a manufactured pass rush instead of just four guys rushing? You know, I think that was one of the things that people got frustrated with Matt Patricia, was sometimes he would hold off from really going after quarterbacks and sort of playing it safe, especially on third down.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's going to be something that's interesting to watch. When it comes to the offense, the big picture thing for me is, and, you know, I've sort of been beating this drum all season, is what can they get out of Patterson? Right. You know, I feel like this is a difference maker type guy with his speed. I really liked what I saw from him in some of the exhibition games. And it's really not that complicated when you want to get him the ball. You know, you can have him running routes and everything like that, but, you know, you just turn around and just throw it to him on a screen or a hitch or whatever, and this guy can make a big play. And, you know, he's got the type of speed that's really, really exciting. It can make the defense throw an extra guy in his direction and open something up for somebody else. So, you know, when it comes to the offense, I think, you know, once Edelman comes back and you'll have a healthy Gronkowski and all that, you know, most of that is going to remain the same. But if you get a Patterson, you know, really going off and, you know, making big plays with his speed, then this offense has another dimension to it, and it really has a, you know, an explosiveness to it.
Yeah, not that, you know, not to take a shot at Brandon Cooks or anything like that, but I think the difference with Patterson is he's much more natural after the catch and much better with the ball in his hands, which I think is a big, you know, thing that we see with this Patriots offense. It's something that they do better, I would say, than throwing the ball vertically downfield 50, 60 yards downfield to a deep threat like a Brandon Cooks. Patterson still adds that speed element to the team, but it doesn't necessarily need to come on a go route or a deep post or something like that. They can kind of, like you said, just throw it to him and let him run. And I talked to him about it a few weeks ago, and he just says, every time I touch the ball, I want to go to the house. Like, right. Every time I touch it, I'm trying to score a touchdown. He is not a guy that's just going to like pick up 3 yards and run out of bounds. You know, he's going full board for the end zone. And, you know, offensively, really the wide receiver corps, they kind of need Cordrell to step up and be a big part of this, especially in the first 4 weeks of the season. But he's a guy that, like you said, you give him only a couple touches a game, he can just make a big factor just off of 3 to 5 touches. You can take one of those 60 yards and all of a sudden he has, you know, one catch for 60 yards. Well, it was one big play, and that can really, you know, kind of sway a game.
Yeah. But
going into this Houston game, just one last point. I think that Trent Brown is really the guy that a lot of people are going to be watching, because a lot of people are saying that it's a new offensive line. It's really not. It's 4/5 of the line is the same guys, and that three interior guys and Cannon, the right tackle, have really been here for a while now. You know, it's those guys that really have a lot of experience in the scheme and in the system. So it's really Trent Brown who's the only newcomer and the only real guy that's going to be you know, playing a lot, that's going to be new. But the problem is that he's a left tackle, so obviously it's, you know, probably the most important position on that entire line. So I think that, you know, very big test for him this week. Obviously, I think he's going to see a lot more of J.J. Watt than people might expect. And then obviously those two guys off the edges and Whitney Mercilus and Jadeveon Clowney, they're going to get thrown at Trent Brown, and also on the opposite side on Marcus Cannon. And they love to move those guys around and switch off who they're rushing against and switch off which side they're rushing from. So it's going to be a real interesting test to see. Does Trent Brown have that attention to detail where every single snap he is fundamentally sound? Every snap he knows who's he's rushing on him and what that guy's tendencies are. Here in New England, a lot of what, you know, makes them so good is having that film study, that preparation, all that kind of stuff that really separates them from other teams, where they really do key on a guy's tendencies. You know, they watch a lot of film and they realize that Clowney likes to go to this one move, or he does this with his foot when he goes to this move, or whatever the case may be. So see what Trent Brown does on Sunday. I think that that's going to be a huge part of this season going forward, is can he be, you know, Nate Solder was not an all-pro tackle. You know, he was an average tackle, but he was very solid and they knew exactly what you were going to get out of him. Can Trent Brown be the same? I think is a big question mark here going forward.
Right, and I think with Trent Brown, the issue is like you've highlighted a couple times, is, you know, in the preseason he's looked good at certain spots, but then he starts to get a little sloppy with his technique the further as it goes along when it comes to his conditioning a little bit, which is something a lot of people had questions with. So when I watch Trent Brown on Sunday, I'm going to be watching how well he does in the third and fourth quarter, you know. Yeah. You know, when you're blocking those Texans edge rushers for four quarters, at what point, do you stay at a high level for the entire game, or do you start to sort of, you know, slack off, or not slack off, but, you know, level off a little bit as the game gets along? And, you know, I feel confident that this is going to be a good offensive line. You know, I mean, like you said, it's mostly the same guys. But you can't have a hole at left tackle. That your left tackle position has to be strong for you in order to be, you know, an elite offensive line. So, you know, I think it's disappointing. It's tough to see somebody like Isaiah Wynn go down. Yeah. That was a very tough loss. And, you know, but, you know, you look at a guy like David Andrews and, you know, Shaq Mason, and, you know, those are top-notch guys for their position. So, you know, as long as those guys continue to be as good as they've been, and you just get, you know, solid production out of the Trent Brown, I don't think you have too much to worry about. Plus, you know, obviously he can't avoid every hit, but man, is there anybody better than Brady when it comes to, you know, moving in the pocket and finding an open hole and, you know, and finding a receiver? It's just, it's ridiculous how he's able to do that, especially at this age. So, you know, I think, you know, I don't have too many questions when it comes to the offense. I think, you know, they'll be able to score points on Sunday. I think they'll be able to score points most Sundays. I think the issue, again, like I said, is, you know, will this defense generate a consistent pass rush? Will those third and fourth cornerbacks, when they're on the field, or safety or whoever, will they be able to cover receivers, you know, for however long they need to if the pass rush isn't there, you know? And, you know, how well will that defense hold up when they face truly elite offenses? Because when last year, you know, we saw it, just wasn't there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's a big thing right there is, you know, a lot of the problems with the defense last year, they were able to kind of mask them against some of the bad teams and with scheme and game planning and, you know, just being able to hold it together with duct tape, it felt like at some points in time in the season. And then when it really counted against a really good offense, again, you know, with Philadelphia, they weren't able to do it. And that's really going to be ultimately with this team. You know, it sounds, the good news is that, you know, for Patriots fans, that we expect them to go into deep January, early February, make another run at a Super Bowl. So that's good news. But obviously these little things, Trent Brown, you know, the depth at cornerback, depth at receiver, the defense as a whole, as the talent level as a whole, those are the little things that kind of, you know, come up to bite you in the AFC Championship game, in the Super Bowl, and it can cost you another ring, which is obviously but before we get there, we got to get to the Houston Texans because, you know, it's 1 week at a time here in New England. And I sat down with a three-time Super Bowl champion and Matt Chatham, and nobody better to talk to this time of year than Matt, who obviously knows a thing or two about winning a few Super Bowls and what the Patriots like to do. So here's my interview with Matt. All right, here we are with three-time Super Bowl champion, ex-Patriot linebacker Matt Chatham. Matt, how's it going?
Life's good, Evan. What's up, man? Big week. Time to get back to the real stuff.
Yeah, it's exciting, exciting. Quick question. Where do you keep your Super Bowl rings?
Oh, yeah, that's a secret, right? No, I mean, they're in multiple places, let's put it that way. So, lock and key. Occasionally, you have to pull them out for your appearance or something like that where you want to, you know, bring them out for meet and greet or something. But generally speaking, they kind of stay put away.
Cool, cool. So from a player's perspective, what is it like to go from preseason football where the games don't really count to regular season football where all of a sudden it's go time?
I'd say some of my finest memories in the NFL, other than, you know, outside of game victories and things like that, but one of the moments where you feel this like sense of contentment kind of come over you is that first practice when you walk back out, realize you've made the team and the team considerably, right? So after the cuts, you know, camp has a different feel to it. It wasn't 90 when I was playing, but there's a lot of bodies on a field. So the stretch lines are super deep. And that first day when you come out there and, you know, this is going to sound perverse. I don't mean it this way, but it's not good to see those 20 guys gone. But when it is, you do kind of get this sense that, whew, I made it. And now this is our team. It has sort of a more of a communal feel. It's a smaller room now. And you look across the field and, you know, stretch lines are 4 or 5 lines deep as opposed to twice that or whatever. So I think it's a pretty cool moment where you're like, okay, that's what that offseason was all about. I made it past that hurdle. Now there's, you know, 16 more, but it is a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, I saw today in the locker room, Keon Crossan was talking to some reporters, Patriots rookie corner, and you could definitely tell from him just from last week to this week, the sense of relief off his shoulders that he did make the team and he was going to be on the Pats and all those things. So that makes total sense. From a week one jitters, excitement, what was it for you? Were you excited or were you a little nervous?
So my very first NFL season was, 2000, and I didn't get to soak it in like Keon did, because, I mean, at least he was here through a training camp with them, and I was cut by the Rams. I was final cuts, thought I made the team, was given my game plan book for the week, your final preseason game, I believe at the time was a Thursday or Friday, something like that. Yeah. So you kind of think in your head you got to survive the weekend. And I've been told by my position coach I was good to go, got my little mini game plan, which is like a thinner notebook, and made it to maybe Sunday. You know, I'm not recalling exactly what, maybe it was Saturday, I guess the record would show which day I got cut on, but I made it a couple days past when I thought I was good to go. And Charlie Army at the time was the GM for the Rams had come and said, hey, we've got an injury situation going on at wide receiver. My best recollection, I think it was Tony Horn, hamstring, groin, something like that. Guy on the team, both that's banged up, and they're like, you know what, we're going to have to bring someone up off the practice squad to fill in that spot. And, you know, you essentially learn at that moment. I was an undrafted free agent. I thought I had made the roster, but I was probably number 53. You kind of learn that in that moment. So, I was told at the time that, hey, but we want to keep you here on practice squad. This is a temporary thing. Then you'll come back up. So I, you know, okay, I don't know what any of this stuff means. Thanks, Charlie, I guess. And next thing you know, I'm on waivers. I have to clear waivers, and New England picked me up. I was like, oh, geez, what does that mean? I didn't even know where New England was. So now I'm on a flight out to Boston, and I basically, you know, I didn't have that, the jitter. I didn't have the nervousness. I was more just unsettled because I, you know, I was really quickly trying to learn as much of the playbook as I can. Rob Ryan was my position coach at the time, and Pepper Johnson. Those guys were in the linebacker room. And it was just like a whirlwind of a week trying to teach me, you know, like a fraction of the playbook so I could get out there and do 10 or 15 plays of defense. Just kind of, you know the basic coverages. If it was an exotic call, I probably wouldn't be in. Quick, get up to speed on special teams. I didn't have time to be nervous. Let's put it that way. I didn't figure out what I was doing or come to appreciate the situation until probably weeks later.
Wow, that's a heck of a story, and kind of goes to show the brutal, you know, business of the NFL, unfortunately, for some of these guys. And kind of like Chad Hansen, who the Patriots just picked up, I'm sure now his head is just spinning about trying to learn the playbook and everything and get on Tom Brady's in Tom Brady's circle of trust and all that type of stuff. It's a similar you know, deal there with Hansen getting picked up on waivers just like you did.
Yeah. And I think in part, you know, after then from that point, then you're making teams year after year, you start to do longer contracts, you feel a little more sense of security. But the, you know, what you feel that week one is much different than those first couple where you just kind of get by that line. But we were one of those teams in 2000 for Patriots fans out there. They may remember this. I think it's been a couple teams this year. I know Cleveland had a really high waiver claim number. I want to say maybe it was the Bears, but their Bills or somebody out there had like a 6 or 7 or like a really unusually high number. We were like that in 2000. I've forgotten at this point what the number was, but it was me, Sali Asai, Joe Andruzzi. I don't remember the rest of the crew, but there was a bunch of us that had walked in the door that weren't with these guys through camp. And I think it was an indication of, you know, sort of what Bill thought of what he was left with, you know, and he was trying to find his kind of guy. So he cut it pretty low. And all of us, by and large, as best I remember anyway, played that week. So it's like, hey, you're here. Get ready. Get up to speed quick and go out and play.
Yeah, no excuses. And Ewan and Jersey ended up sticking around for a pretty good amount of time after that. So that's pretty cool. Moving on now to the Houston Texans, obviously coming in here week one, Deshaun Watson kind of be the story here as the Houston pass rush on the other side of the ball. But from a defensive perspective, what's it like playing a mobile quarterback like Deshaun, and kind of what's your approach going in?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. I'm trying to think of the guys. I know it's different, but you know, the Vince Youngs, the Cordell Stewarts, I'm trying to think of ones that would have been more my era. And I remember there's sort of a very definitive approach. You go into it looking really hard at where you absolutely don't want him to escape. And a lot of time that's usually arm side. So right-handed guy, you don't want to lose contain the defense's left. The other side, you obviously want pocket integrity, but you feel a little less about it if he resets and has to throw across his body. So there are some times where, you know, you can tell both defensive ends or both outside linebackers, hey, we have to keep him inside the pocket, but you don't want to get into a situation where they're dancing too much and, you know, not, you know, you get about 330-pound tackle and you don't really get to an edge, and sometimes you end up dancing 5 yards from that guy, and that's no good either. So it's there's basically the coaching, as I remember it, was, you know, it's a different thing from guy to guy. You know, McNabb's going to be a little bit different. There's like the Jay Feeler, which is maybe closer to a Tannenbaum now. I'm going through really old names here. But when you have a guy that you know can get out and go, you got to sort of know tendencies, kind of like, you know, how a receiver's releases might be, or, you know, little stance stuff that attack or guard might do, or back stuff, whatever it may be. Quarterbacks have tendencies too, where they like to escape to, where they like to reset, where they're hurt if we can chase them there. And there were times where it's like, you know what, we can go straight. We can go each guy, you know, up the field and trying to play at quarterback depth and then tracing back down and holding them in the pocket. But you know, that doesn't work. We can declare sides that we're allowed to game on and sides we're not. And that's for purposes of, you get caught in a twist that happened in the Carolina game, Dietrich Wise, and I think it was Adam Butler ran one and it just wasn't run well. I think it was Kyle Van Noy was back in the gap, but that whole thing. But the point is, if there are times where you can have that taken off the table for you by the coaching staff and say, okay, we're not gaming his arm side, or we're going to always game the backside, or we're going to the side the running back's offset to, game the offset back, or game don't game the arm side, or we're basically going to declare we're going to allow to go for, because if this guy's so good and he may get out some, we want to make sure he gets out to a certain place. So, I mean, it's easy to say. Some of these guys are so incredibly talented, it's going to happen. But it is a way to lose reps quick. You know, if you go way up the field past him and just allow him to step and slide and reset to his arm side, you're going to be out. If you try to make an inside move, you know, at 4 or 5 yards of depth, and his, you know, quarterback's three-step dropping or five-stepping into 8 or 10 yards of depth, oh, and he's going to walk right around that edge too. So it's just a week where you don't want to, you know, it's not spin move week. It's not blow by him week. It's really controlled power rushing or short in the corner with a set down move so that you can keep the edge, because you don't want him out the pocket. This guy is one of the best out there. And unfortunately for the Patriots standpoint, they weren't particularly good at it in the preseason. They had a couple bad drives with the one groups against Cam. They had, I wouldn't say it was drop back losing contain on Colt McCoy. It was just playing boot and move action. Not great. You know, they were doing dash pass. They were doing a little bit of boot stuff. They need to move the pocket, and they didn't play it real well. So I think they've got a nice little canon of plays where Bill's going to be beating them up on it this week. See, hey, we coached it that way then. This guy will take even more advantage. So then they just kind of drill in exactly, here's how we'll rush him. And the one final thought, I don't go long on this point, but the one final thought that sometimes they'll encourage, and this isn't unique to New England. A lot of teams do this, but if they know that there's a place they want to push him to, they can say one side is, and this is actually, I'm not going to use the terminology because I don't want to put that out there, but basically one side is going to do an upfield move, go up and around the tackle, and you're predisposed that that's where you're going to go. And they purposely will tell the other side to go inside, overly aggressively so that he'll see that, so that he'll escape there, and then the interior guys are covering you up in the rush. It's almost like letting him see that you've lost leverage to that side, so he'll go there while the other side guy chases him around, and then the interior people cover you up, or a rat, or a guy that's sort of shadowing the quarterback. So there's ways where you do it sort of purposely and allow yourself to lose leverage if you're chasing him, usually against his arm side. But by and large, if he's out of the pocket much this week, we know, you know, your odds are pretty good that they're not happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that last year with Deshaun Watson in that game. He got out of the pocket a lot. And that one that you pointed out with Adam Butler against the Carolina Panthers, I asked him, you know, on that play, was your assignment to just blow up the middle and hope that the edge rush was going to contain Cam in the pocket? And he kind of said, yeah, that, you know, my goal on that play was to get after Cam, and I was kind of hoping that the edge guys, where they ran that little stunt, were going to be able to hold them in the pocket, and it just didn't really work out. But he said that, you know, really the key for them is pressure, then contain, especially for the big guys in the middle of the defense. So it's an interesting strategy, especially against Deshaun, because he moves so much and throws so well on the move. You know, that's really, like, as you said, you know, him, Russell Wilson, those types of guys are even more dangerous, in my opinion, than just the guys that are just mobile. You know, that they will just run around a lot. But looking at the secondary now, with DeAndre Hopkins, obviously one of the best receivers in the league, we've seen the Patriots take a couple different approaches to those types of receivers, those big time number one receivers, double teams, bracket coverages. Sometimes they just put Stephon Gilmore on a guy and have him shadow. What do you think they're going to do this week?
I don't know. They always play multiple, so they usually don't adopt one particular thing. I think this is probably a week for that. I mean, it typically is when you have such a clear-cut one, right? This is they're down at the tight end position. It's sort of a cobbled together group, some young guys they like, but it's not any provens, right? A tight end. So tight end is sort of a definitely down the list complementary position. Will Fuller is now back and healthy. He's a burner, but a little inconsistent with as a catch guy. So it's a very definitive, they got a guy, you know, they got a guy to take away. But that doesn't mean necessarily showing half safety or cutting him each and every snap or either whatever. I mean, it's hard to do this over a podcast, but there's 100 different ways you can do it. I just think that their typical mode is to mix it up. You know, sometimes it's in and out, so the left right is the cut. Sometimes it's low and high. Sometimes it's zone, you know, where you'll buzz underneath him with the flat defender who knows he can overly aggressively go underneath it because he's going to have half health over the top. And that can be zone stuff as well. So, and then obviously in the NFL, it's combo coverages, some that are man and some that are zone. So I just think you have to make life hard for him. You can look back through their games a year ago, and he's had monster games when they've still lost. So it's not as if he has a big game, you lose. It's just you really need to make him go the long, hard way. You know, if he has 10 catches for 85 yards, that's, and they don't win, you know, that's, and they're not scorers, I think that's still a really good game. You just don't want to get into a situation where he has a game breaker, a 40 or 50 or 60 yard catch, puts multiple red zone kind of wins. That's the stuff where you really got to put the screws to him. I just don't think he's a guy that'll take chances again. You know, press him, if it were Gilmore, like you mentioned in that one example, press him with nothing over the top, right? Or, you know, you can bail him, but you're going to need to do something under this guy. He just deserves a lot of attention. And you know, I don't think they have a proven other alternative to where you would want to play it straight. So we'll see how they go.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the good thing with Houston is that they don't really have, as you said, they don't have a tight end. They don't really have a middle of the field threat that they can have to kind of close the middle of the field and play more cover one, so they can play that cover two coverages over the top and kind of limit the things that Will Fuller, who's just, as you said, a speedster burner guy on the outside. You're probably going to want to put safety help over the top on his man most of the time if he's going to be running a lot of go routes, you would assume. So maybe they, I think last year, I watched that tape back, they ran a lot of cover two against Houston to kind of, you know, keep the middle of the field open and allow the guys on the outside some extra help. So we'll see what happens this week. Obviously they're going to change it up a lot, but Hopkins is really, he's the one that makes that offense go outside of Watson. They don't really have a ton of great skill players outside of him, I would say.
Yeah, and I think when you're trying to read coverage of the Patriots, I would be careful. They play very little two. Sometimes you'll see what looks like a half safety and it's just four. They'll bail and that half guy is actually the backside corner. So they don't love two because they don't have a run through middle linebacker that's playing that middle hole spot. So I would say that their way of staying on top of a guy like Will without just definitively, you know, splitting the safeties and having him jammed at the line kind of thing is four. So but four is a really complicated coverage. It's hard to read, because even now, you know, even being in that system for 9 years at two different places, it's the cover four has rules based upon the formation. So when you get a guy like Fuller, say opposite, if he's aligned opposite DeAndre Hopkins, four becomes a split coverage if it's 3-by-1, but it's something versus 2-by-2. And this is way too far into the weeds, but I would just say I would be careful every time you see what looks like two safeties over the top of New England calling it two, because they very rarely run that. So one of their favorites is actually shell stuff, which is five is essentially man two, and they will do some of that where, but again, that's two guys having a zone responsibility and everyone else having man. So, and then they allow their linebackers to hug, which kind of throws off anyone from the outside to watch, and it throws me off all the time because it's different than the coverage, and the guy has autonomy to kind of run his own thing. He can run a game and in and out with an end and a linebacker. So that's what makes it kind of fun watching, but also kind of gives me pause to start guessing on stuff like that, because they more than anyone screw with you. You can go, we go watch Indianapolis tape, or you go watch some other, the Tampa or something. It's like, wow, okay. Four coverages today and three fronts and we're good to go. New England's, from experience, you're really not able to do that with them.
Yeah, great point. Great point. It is very difficult. I can often watch a play five or six times trying to figure out what the hell the coverage is that they're running. And sometimes I just kind of put my arms up and I'm like, I don't know. It's some sort of this kind of variation, but I'm not really sure what kind of wrinkle they've put into it or whatnot. Moving on now to the other side of the ball, the pass rush. Obviously, the Houston Texans is basically what everybody's asking about down at Gillette these last few days. And obviously, they have J.J. Watt, Whitney Mercilus, Jadeveon Clowney. This has got to be one of the best front sevens in the league.
Yeah, healthy. And I think that's the biggest question mark for them, because so many of those important players, Matthew, now obviously at the strong safety position, or free. We don't know that. And I think that's kind of one of the little quirks we'll be looking for in game day. They've listed him at free. I'm always used to seeing him in Arizona as a down or a move guy or a rover of some sort. And then he'll play middle field sometimes, but he's like an all over the field kind of guy. And I'm curious with some of those new move positions, if they feel comfortable, you know, playing the old diamond front. Romeo's back to being coordinator of Rabes is now in Tennessee, obviously. And we play diamond a lot when I played, and that's something that he loves to go to, but he's got a quirk there now because Jadeveon Clowney isn't typical in anything he does. So he'll play Jadeveon play nose in a 5-man line. That's a diamond is. He'll basically let these guys float all over the place. And I think that's more what's terrifying, not just that they're good players. It's that, and if you happen to find a coordinator like Vrabes or like Romeo that's willing to put him anywhere, it makes it really hard for like a game plan standpoint, not necessarily the game plan standpoint, but from a film study standpoint. So imagine you know, in a normal week, you're playing guard, you're playing tackle, whatever it is. And I only know it obviously from the other side, but you know your tackle that you're going against and you study him all week, and you know the tight end you go against, you study him all week. And I'm just presuming, you know, on the other side, the tackle knows the couple outside linebackers you might see at the defensive end and sub, and he studies them. Imagine this week where, you know, Shaq Mason might see Clowney potentially, you know, Tooney might see him, and Cannon might, and if he's playing or later. Basically all five at some point need to study and watch Clowney film, which is kind of crazy. And it's a little bit the same way with JJ Watt. He's an end, but he can end up in a gap. He can end up over a guard. You know, this is a weird week where I think all five offensive linemen that are starting, and even your swing guys, are going to have to study, you know, all the guys. You know, maybe not all, but you'll see maybe twice as many people over you, and you'll have to get a little deeper in your film study than a normal week.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually writing about that exact thing and kind of using some of the PFF data to show people that they just move these guys around all over the place. And Belichick talked about it on his conference call on Monday, too, just how much Romeo Crennel is one of the best, you know, in the league at kind of moving everybody around and making matchup nightmares for guys. And David Andrews basically said, you know, we just got to get in our, you know, game plans, watch the film, make sure that all of us are all on the same page, all five guys, and even Brady, too, you know, behind them. Is making sure that, you know, you can't necessarily point out every single player, you know, like the Merciless is here and Watt is there and Clowney is there on every single play is what Andrew said. But he said, you know, you got to kind of be, you know, cognizant of where all those guys are because they love to move them around.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So from a, you know, game plan specific stuff aside, week one, what are you looking for the Patriots just on a big picture standpoint here?
Well, I don't think much changes here. Even with, you know, from a year ago, it was a poor defensive effort relative to the pocket control, relative to some mental busts in sort of the move, misdirection stuff, stacking receivers, motions, not picking it up correctly, things coming out of bunches, stuff like that. So I would imagine, you know, that was the nightmare scenario offensively, and it still wasn't enough. And I think that's an important thing to keep in context. It would be an outlier performance by this defense to have a day like they had then. And it still wasn't enough against Brady's offense, against a really good crew that hit them a lot on that day, but still ended up being a multi touchdown kind of day. So I think you have to kind of keep that in context and say, this is not a group that we need to take risks against. It's not, if we don't go pressure, you know, Deshaun Watson, they're going to hang 500 on us. I think you don't want to expose yourself against these guys by giving something up. I think the really good pressure guys love it if you're going to send a fifth rusher, because when you send the fifth rusher, that tells them where that other gap's not occupied. So if you send, you know, you send five, that's three and two somehow, some way. It tells them real quickly where the backside is to go and get away. And sometimes it's better to let the four come or even the three and spy and let him declare his rush, then go get him, as opposed to predetermining for him where his escape route's going to be. I just think that typically you look at Cam, you look at any of these guys that are the more mobile dudes, pressuring them is the thing that other teams do when they don't have the Tom Brady offense on their side. And I know people will have some reservations about that, and it's not unreasonable, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen with that offense because of a missing piece or two. But I still think you have to go you defensive play call with the idea that you still have that offense over there. So there's no reason to take risks. There's no reason to go crazy with it. It's point control. Yards will happen. You'll call differently as you get into high red 30 and in. That's when you really tighten the screws up. Don't expose yourself at other parts of the field. And offensively with the Patriots, I think it's going to be an exciting week. It's going to be fun. I think if I were to place a chip right now on top personnel group, I'm guessing 12. I think it's going to be a lot of two tight end stuff, because ostensibly that makes Gronk stand up as wide receiver one. And Allen is your inline guy, is essentially your tight end. So it's 11. It's 11, but it's not really 11 personnel for the week. Gronk's the receiver. He's extended. He may be out at an X. He might be out at a Z. He might be in the slot. But Gronk is one of your wide receivers, and you're only carrying three. And I think that's important, because, you know, if you're racking your brain about how are they going to do this with just three wide receivers up and active for the roster, presumably on game day, I'm not expecting the Hanson kid would be active. Well, you know, what stresses that is if you think you're coming out in four wide receiver sets. Well, you're not. You don't have four. So I think it just intuitively makes you think this might be a bigger week where 12 12 personnel means the one back and two tight ends. It's just only two wide receivers on the field. So there's only two wide receivers on the field. The other guy's a rotational guy. So it's a three-man rotation there. And you can play other packages, 20, where you bring your third receiver in. Or you can go a little bit of true 11. But I just feel like if they're going to be thin there, it'll be a big week for Dwayne Allen to be the sixth protector, Dwayne Allen to be an edge blocker, and Gronk to just go be a mismatch with somebody else so that they only have to keep two guys on the field. And again, that some of that can be a two-back stuff, 21 personnel, where they still spread it out and make it look like 11. But that other guy's James White. You know, James White's aligned in the slot and Gronk's extended as an X or something like that. So there's so many different ways to do this. I think from the wonky football side of it and those guys that are in there putting this thing together this week, I think there's a lot less panic on what they can do than maybe a fan would, because you're going to see that depth chart and say, oh gosh, I don't know any of these three wide receivers. And say, well, their number one receiver's Gronk. And they've got another target in James White who can be a 12 target guy in a game, and it's no sweat. It's a pretty common thing for him. And then you're looking at Hogan and Dorsett and those guys as complementary players, which is what fits them best. And then you throw in Cordarrelle Patterson as a screen guy, a reverse guy, a catch and run guy, some game plan stuff for him. And all of a sudden, wow, that's a really explosive element that wasn't there. We haven't even gotten to Jeremy Hill and Rex Burkhead and all that stuff. I think they've got a ton of options this week. So I still say, by and large, if you're placing a chip, keep the Patriots. The Patriots should be at a high 20, low 30 number. I mean, I have a hard time thinking anyone keeps them away from that. And the Patriots defensively just have to play top down, as they always do.
Yeah, I keep on telling people whenever they have me on their podcast or whatever about the fact that, you know, Rob Gronkowski is really the number one receiver. People just like to look at the wide receiver group, you know, in a vacuum and just say, oh, no, right now Chris Hogan is our number one receiver. Well, no, Chris Hogan's really like the second or third option. And then when Edelman comes back, you know, the third or fourth option. So it's a trickle down effect all from Rob, and that 12 personnel that you said, with really being kind of like 11 is kind of all over the league now. I mean, we see the Eagles do it a lot with Ertz and, you know, Selleck or Trey Burton, whoever it was in the past, and now it's going to be Dallas Goedert, it sounds like. So that's kind of taking over the league, I think, if by storm is having kind of that those two tight end guys or multiple running backs or whatever it may be. But thanks so much for the time, Matt, and where can everybody follow you and read you now, The Athletic, Boston, and Nesson, and what do you got going on?
Yep. So, yeah, a lot of places. So, at Chatham58 on Twitter, I'm obviously a full-time employee at Nesson, loving stuff there four nights a week. And then we're doing a pregame show this year that'll be streaming on Nesson, all the social platforms, and we'll be pushing that through my social site here. And you'll learn a lot more about that in the coming days. I still do the Real Thing Patriots podcast. We're now doing it this year as a game after. So, in years past, you know, we have a really nice audience for that podcast, but they often catch me midweek, which is giving myself a little grace to watch the game and then preview the next team. The podcast this year is a Monday morning. Monday, you know, hopefully we have it up by noon. It's basically meant to be hey, I stayed up all night. I drank a pot of coffee for you guys, and I broke the game down. So it won't be all 22, the coach's copy, all 22, I hate that word, but coach's copy, whatever it's called. the one that the NFL thing gets you. Because you know this, Evan, they don't make that available till Tuesday night or later. So to do a next day thing, we just have to watch the game copy. And, you know, for those New England fans out there that pay attention to college football, I work for ESPN. I call games on Saturdays at BC last week and BC this weekend and all over the place throughout the year. So if college football is your thing, I'm doing that too.
He's Matt Chatham. Matt, thanks a lot, man.
All right. Thanks, Evan. Take care.
A huge thank you once again to Matt Chatham, who's truly one of the best resources for breaking down Patriots film. As a former Patriot, there's nobody better in the Boston media to talk about this stuff. But before we sign off, Adam, let's each give a little parting shot. What's one element in this one that you'll be watching on Sunday?
I want to see, we touched on it a little bit, but I want to see how they approach Watson, because, you know, it's so funny how every year when they face one of these guys, they really stress, all right, well, we got to keep him in the pocket. It's not necessarily the pass rush. It's how we keep him in the pocket. And it never seems to work. No team ever is able to keep any player like Deshaun Watson or Cam Newton in the pocket effectively. So I was curious to see if they take another tack, if they, you know, are a little bit more aggressive, if they force the issue a little bit more, and see how that goes. You know, maybe it works. You know, Deshaun is a, you know, he's a slippery guy. He can make plays with his feet, but he's not as somebody who's as big as Cam Newton So if you do get your hands on him, you can bring him down, where I feel like with Cam, that's just not going to happen. So I'm curious to see if they actually, you know, get a little bit more aggressive and, you know, maybe blitz a little bit more. But, you know, my guess is they'll be a little conservative. I don't know what the, you know, what it's exactly going to look like, but I'm curious to see, you know, if they're going to throw a little bit more pressure at him that they would usually do against a mobile quarterback, because usually they just sort of, you know, that mush rush type of stuff and just try to keep him in there.
Yeah, one thing that I noticed when I was rewatching the game from last year with Deshaun is that he does this thing where a lot of mobile quarterbacks, when you pressure them up the middle, they try to escape around the edges to the left or their right. But he just stands in there like a running back and just jukes the guy that's coming at him up the middle. And then he goes back up the middle, you know, right up the gut against them and rushes the ball that way. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, obviously in the past, the Patriots typically use their edge rushers to kind of contain a quarterback like Deshaun Watson in the pocket. And they let their D tackles rush upfield a little bit. But in this game, I'm really interested to see because of how elusive he is. He's not, like you said, he's not like a Cam Newton that's just a beast that, you know, is very difficult to bring down because of his size. He's really very elusive and very quick. So it's going to be interesting to see what the approach is. My guess is that you're going to get a lot of the mush rush. But along these lines, my last point here is that I'm kind of looking at the secondary and seeing how they are able, because of Deshaun's running ability, how they match up here with DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller on the outside. So the Texans, they really don't have a middle of the field threat, you know, tight end, slot receiver, running back out of the backfield. Those kind of positions are further down the depth chart, so to speak. I mean, they have Ryan Griffin at tight end, and Bruce Ellington's a nice slot receiver, but he's more of a vertical guy, not like a Julian Edelman type that's going to juke guys in the middle of the field. So my question is what do they do to kind of combat, you know, Hopkins and Fuller on the outside? Because the issue is that obviously you want to give a lot of attention to DeAndre Hopkins, but Will Fuller, although he's not necessarily a consistent, you know, catch guy, he is an absolute burner. And yeah, if you put him on an island with Eric Rowe or even Stephon Gilmore, it's going to be really tough to keep up with him every single play. And as you know, with those types of guys, you know, the Fullers, the Deshaun Jacksons, one play and it's an 80-yard touchdown is a huge, you know, turning point in the game. Even if that's his only catch in the entire game, you know, that can really turn the game on its head. But the problem is that you really can't play two deep safeties, because that opens the middle of the field. And when you open the middle of the field, that gives Deshaun Watson a lot of room to run underneath those, you know, those coverages. So I think it's a really interesting chess match between Bill Belichick and Brian Flores and old friend Bill O'Brien to kind of figure out how they can kind of put two guys over the top to help these cornerbacks with these receivers and also be able to add enough bodies in the box and in the front seven to kind of slow down Deshaun Watson's running ability. You kind of have to pick your poison almost. So I'm interested to see which poison they pick. My guess is that they're going to say if Will Fuller is going to go off on us for 160 yards and two touchdowns, and that's why we lose the game. That's, you know, tip your cap. That's my guess. Because that's just what the Patriots have gone with in the past. Usually when they have a true number one, like a DeAndre Hopkins or an Antonio Brown or Julio Jones, their game plan in the secondary especially is centered around stopping that one guy and taking that one guy away. But it's a really interesting game of chess here, because you start taking guys and putting safeties back there deep, and you take another body out of the middle of the field, and you can see it when I went back and watched that 2016 game where they had Brock Osweiler at quarterback, and that was obviously a completely different animal because, well, Osweiler is not as good as Deshaun is, but also he's not a mobile guy. So they were playing a lot of too deep in that game because they knew that Osweiler wasn't a threat to run the ball. But you watch a lot of those coverages and the middle of the field just completely vacates. And if now you put the mobile aspect in there with Deshaun Watson, and if he sees that those running lanes right in front of him like that, and there's nobody open because they're doubling the guys on the outside, he's going to run for over 100 yards against you. It's just going to that's the way that's going to happen. So if you do that, you know, you put an extra safety deep. Now you only have three or four guys in the front seven to kind of slow down Watson. So I really think that kind of chess match and how Bill Belichick decides to approach it is going to be really interesting. Obviously, there's some juicy things on the offensive side of the ball. We talked about Trent Brown. I think that's probably the biggest one. But defensively, obviously Deshaun had a great game against them last year, and the Texans probably should have won that game. It really took Tom Brady bailing out, you know, the defense once again, and going on a fourth quarter drive for the ages to kind of win that game. And even that Brandon Cooks touchdown that he threw at the end of the game was just stupid, ridiculous. So, you know, it's just one of those things where you kind of really have to pick your poison. And I bet you that they kind of take their chances with Fuller.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Hopkins is one of the best in the game. And I feel like, you know, they're going to put so much attention on him. And like you said, if somebody else beats him, then they'll tip their cap. But, you know, Watson's such an X factor. You know, he is such a – I mean, I thought he was, you know, it was kind of funny when he was coming out of college to see all the analysts, you know.
Pick him apart.
Pick him apart, man. I think he actually exceeded my expectations for how he played in the first few games that he had before he got injured. I'm curious to see how much he's progressed. I mean, obviously the injury sets you back, but, you know, I think he's already going to be one of the best young quarterbacks in the league. And, you know, he's somebody that the Patriots are going to have to deal with for however long he's in it. So it'll be a fun thing to watch. And I think, injuries, you know, barring any injuries, I think this is a Texans team that you're going to see in the playoffs too.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people picking this Texans team to even win the division over the Jacksonville Jaguars, who we'll see next week. And Adam and I will have that, you know, completely covered same way that we did today. And we'll be previewing the Jaguars next Thursday ahead of that game in Jacksonville, showdown of last year's rematch of last year's AFC Championship game. Plenty of storylines to talk about with that one. And the whole Gronk Jalen Ramsey thing, I think, is going to be a lot of fun. Gronk didn't want to go there this week. He just asked your old friend Karen Grigge and asked him about you know, with Jalen Ramsey's comments that he was overrated. And Gronk was kind of like, well, let's table that one for next week. So I think that Gronk won't say anything until after the game. I think he's smart enough to not give Jalen Ramsey any bulletin board material. Players like that, but it's going to be very interesting because I think that's a very angry Jacksonville group down there that feels like they should have been in the Super Bowl last year, and they kind of blew it there in the fourth quarter. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.